Escape. The sound of marching boots hitting the road filled the air.
You stupid old man, Lek shouted. I'm never putting you on watch again.
Finally, Lao Ge said. He winked at Kyoshi.
Officers wearing constabulary green hustled into the tea house. They fanned out along the sides to accommodate their numbers, reaching to the corners. 20 or so, wearing quilted armor with single Dao broadswords on their backs. At the head of their formation, still in plain clothes but now wearing the same headband adorned with the prefectural badge of the law as the others, were the same 3 men who'd been in the tea house earlier.
Remind me again who's good at spotting undercovers, Lek?
Karima snarled. In a moment of panic, Kyoshi thought the officers had come for her on behalf of Janju. But that couldn't have been the case. If he'd sent out messengers immediately, they still wouldn't have beaten a bison. No, she thought with a grimace. They were here for the girl who'd walked into an outlaw hideout and started making demands with outlaw codes. She'd incriminated herself in public like a fool.
In the name of Governor Deng, you are under arrest, the captain said.
Instead of a sword, he pointed a ceremonial truncheon topped with the Earth King's seal at them, but it looked heavy enough to break bones regardless.
Put down your weapons!
Deng. The name brought more terror to Kyoshi's heart than a charging saber-toothed moose lion. Stout, red-nosed Governor Deng was a frequent visitor to Janju's house and one of his closest allies. Kyoshi glanced at Rongi. The firebender's worried head shake confirmed her fear. If they got caught here tonight, the whole operation was over. They'd be back in Janju's grasp before his breakfast got cold. The captain did not like the eye contact between her and Rongi.
I said, put down your weapons, he shouted, bristling for a fight.
The Dao Fei looked at their empty hands in confusion. Kyoshi realized that unless the man felt particularly threatened by Lao Ge's bottles, the only armed one was she. The glinting war fan was still in her hand, its mate stuck in her belt. She stood up so that she could have room to yank the other fan out. The captain took a step back in astonishment. He'd interpreted her unfurling to her full height as a hostile act. He wasn't the first.
Take them,
he shouted to his men. There were so many of them. Crammed in the dark confines of the tea house, the police force seemed larger in number than Tagaka's marauders. 5 of the officers made a beeline for Kyoshi, the obvious target. They were knocked down by a blast of fire. Kyoshi glanced back at Rongi again. She had her fist extended, her skin smoking. Her face was upset, but unrepentant. If they were in, they were in full measure. Rongi didn't do things by halves. Inspired by her decisiveness, Wong picked up Lao Ge and threw the drunkard bodily at the captain like a rag doll. Lao Ge's warlike screech as he flew through the air was the only sign that he'd agreed to the act. The 2 of them must have done it before. The element of surprise worked strongly in their favor as Lao Ge's wiry arms wrapped around the captain's neck and his legs scissored around the waist of his subordinate, becoming a human net. Another blast from Rongi sizzled past Kyoshi's ear. She no longer knew what was going on. Men closed in on her with swords drawn. She picked up the nearest, heaviest object, the pie-show board, by one of its legs and swung it in an arc. The policemen were bowled over like wheat stalks by the dense wooden bludgeon. The ones who tried to block her wild strikes with their Dao had their swords bent and crushed against their torsos for their trouble. Fresh officers ran in through the door only to slip on a sheet of ice that Karima laid down using nothing but the remaining wine from Lao Ge's stash. Kyoshi jolted in surprise at the reserved, minimalist twirl of her wrists and fingers. For a moment, it looked like Tagaka of the Fifth Nation was fighting on her side.
Girl!
Lao Ge said, clamping swords inside their scabbards wherever his bony fingers and toes could reach.
Bump the table!
She didn't have the same previous working relationship with him as Wong, but Kyoshi caught his drift. She raised her foot high and stomped the floor. The tea house jumped into the air again, this time tilted higher from the back. Lao Ge and several of the policemen fell through the door. The others were knocked prone, scrambling on the straw and frozen wine. Kiyoshi's new compatriots managed to stay upright, having seen the trick before.
"Out the other side!" Lek yelled.
"What about Lao Ge?" She hadn't meant to dump him into the thick of the enemy.
"He can handle himself. Move!"
She flung the pie show board at the nearest officers and followed the others through the kitchen. It was empty, just a little room with a clay stove that smoldered from the one attempt Lek had made at tea. Another door gave way, and they were in the town square behind the building. The passage had been disguised, painted over without a frame, and there were no windows. So it was the side of the house that was least well guarded by the police. Only two men held positions there. Kyoshi heard a zip-zip noise, and they crumpled to the ground before they could wave their swords. Lek tucked something back into his pocket.
"Where's your ride?"
Rongi answered, which was good, because Kyoshi had lost her bearings and had no idea.
"Southwest corner of town," she said. "If everyone follows me, I can get us there."
There was a harsh scrape of clay from above. A whole section of roof tiles sloughed off and came crashing down at their heels as they ran. Reaching Peng Peng meant running along the edge of the square, seeking one outlet from the many cramped alleyways branching and forking in different directions like the veins of a leaf. Kyoshi caught sight of the reason why they hadn't been swarmed by more lawmen. Lao Ge was tangling with a whole platoon of them by the main entrance. They slashed wildly at the air he occupied, only to come up empty every time. He folded and rolled his body like the wine still fogged his mind, dodging and flipping, his movements seemingly designed to taunt and frustrate them. Kyoshi saw him leaning over at impossible angles, nearly parallel to the ground, and realized he was subtly earth-bending supports underneath his torso, changing his center of gravity to confound his opponents.
"We can't leave him," she shouted to the others.
Apparently they could, because no one else gave Lao Ge a second thought.
"This one," Rongi said, darting down a passage into the darkness.
But before anyone had a chance to follow, a thick stone wall shot up from the ground, reaching the height of the neighboring roofs, closing the exit off. The police force had brought earthbenders of their own. Lek kept running after her as if he were oblivious to the obstacle in his path. Kiyoshi thought he was going to dash his brains out against the wall. And then he did one of the most amazing things she had ever seen. He stepped up into the thin air. Lek ran higher and higher on invisible stairs. It was only after he'd gone above eye level that she saw how. The thinnest columns of earth she'd seen anyone earthbend shot up from the ground with each of his steps, anticipating where his foot would land next. They provided a moment's support, and then crumbled into dust immediately once his weight shifted off them. His rising path left no trace behind him. Kiyoshi had watched children around the village play by bending the ground they stood on into the air. It was sometimes a test of courage, who could make their pillar the highest, or a game of coordination, taking turns with a partner to seesaw back and forth. But it was always highly destructive to the ground, leaving jagged markers of what had happened. And the players had to remain still, or they'd fall off their platforms. Lek had none of those concerns. He floated, weightless, free of the earth's pull. He stepped over the top of the wall and onto a rooftop before disappearing. The feat wasn't limited to earthbenders. Karima uncorked a small pouch at her waist, and wisps of water spilled forth, gathering under her feet. She stepped higher into nothingness, much as Lek had, only her stairs were powerful, thin little jets that provided the same resistance as earth. If the timing was more difficult for her, or the water less stable, she compensated with supreme grace. Wong glanced at Kiyoshi as if to check what she was thinking.
You can't possibly, was what?
He shrugged at her skepticism and followed his teammates skyward, using earth and dust as Lek had, like it was no big deal. The sight of the gigantic man defying all notions of gravity made her jaw drop. It looked less like bending and more like spiritual chicanery, an invisible hawk lifting Wong's bulk over the roofline. Kiyoshi watched him and Karima run over eaves and windowsills and the blank spaces of alley gaps with equal ease. The whole show had happened in less than seconds. It was a mind-blowing stunt, and highly unfortunate, because no one had taken into consideration that Kiyoshi could not do that. She expressly, with utmost certainty, could not do that.
Cut her off!
A policeman shouted behind her. A second slab of rock shot up to her right. Left, then. She sprinted for the nearest remaining avenue and made it out of the square before it was blocked shut. Immediately, she knew it was a mistake. The alley veered sharply away from the direction the others had gone. The forks in the narrowing street had no markers, and each subsequent guess she made only got her more lost. The houses squeezed in on her as she ran, promising to throttle her by the gills like a fish in a net. A blast of flame shot into the darkening sky, and then another, the source slightly to the right. Rongi was signaling to her where to go. Kiyoshi felt her heart skip a beat for her friend. It was either that, or a conniption from running at full speed for so long. She followed the upcoming bend in the direction of the fire, but so did the lawmen. In fact, they used their knowledge of the town layout to steal a march on her, suddenly popping into view closer behind her. She couldn't double back. And up ahead, a dead end loomed. The alley had been walled up with bricks.
No way out, girl,
an officer with admirable lung capacity bellowed.
Step, she thought to herself. Do the thing like they did.
Her self-berating voice sounded a lot like Rongi in her head.
It should be easier with more speed, right?
She hurled herself toward the wall, praying that she could avatar herself into picking up a technique she'd only seen once. Her on-the-run attempt to bend the necessary struts without destroying the whole town resulted in only pitiful bumps of earth appearing before her. They collapsed under her weight, tripping her up. She fell forward uncontrollably, face first. She wasn't able to cross her arms in front of her before she made impact. Kiyoshi shut her eyes as she slammed into the wall. There was a terrible crash, an explosion of snapping bricks and tearing mortar. When she opened them again, she was on the other side, still running. She'd plowed straight through without feeling a thing. She must have bent reflexively, flinched and wrapped herself in her own power, like a cloak. A quick glance back showed a Kiyoshi-sized hole in the wall and surprised guards trying to decide whether to leap through or go over the top. In her distraction, she collided with the corner of a house. Fear of broken bones caused her to force her way through the clay structure the instant she felt the pain of impact on her shoulder. The building stayed standing, a neat chunk of it ripped off like a sampled loaf of bread. Ahead of her, the spaces between closed-up merchant shops were so narrow that a person smaller than her would have had to stop and wedge through sideways. Rongi sent up another beacon. The only way to get there was as the bird flew. Kiyoshi sent an apology into the cosmos for the damage she was about to cause, and barreled straight into the cluster of buildings. If she couldn't be a creature of grace, then she'd be a battering ram. She smashed through the first wall like it was rice paper. Inside, she crossed the floor in a few steps and burst into the neighboring section, boring a passageway through the cluster of storerooms. Each section she stampeded through offered a momentary glimpse of different merchandise. Dry goods, wet goods, weapons. Ivory that was certainly illegal. Fancy hats.
She was glad that she was only ruining inventory and not harming living occupants with flying debris. Her face felt tight, and she wondered if she'd injured herself, ripped her skin open. But no, she determined. She was grinning with a locked, maddened expression, mindlessly exulting in her own power and destruction. Once she realized it, she quickly worked her jaw back into a grim frown and splashed through the next wall. An unfamiliar sensation caused her to flail after hitting the last barrier. It was freedom. She was in a broad street, going the right way for once. Up above her on the rooftops, the whole crew sprang deftly from surface to surface, bolstering themselves with their element when necessary.
"I see you made your own shortcut," Karima shouted.
The water lifting her up sparkled prettily in the moonlight, making her look like a lunar fairy. Kiyoshi checked behind her to see if anyone had followed the trail of utter devastation she'd left through the town.
"Where's Rangi?"
"Still in the lead. That's quite a companion you've got."
There was another blaze of light that resembled a rocket climbing into the night. Rangi had joined the Daofei on their level. She ran as nimbly as they did on the roof tiles, and when there was a leap too great to make naturally, she stepped on jets of fire that blasted out of her feet, bounding in propulsive arcs across the sky. The sight made Kiyoshi's breath come to a standstill at the very time she needed it flowing. Rangi was so beautiful, illuminated by moon and fire, that it hurt. She was strength and skill and determination wrapped around an unshakable heart. Kiyoshi had always admired Rangi, but right now, it felt as if she were gazing at her friend through a pane of glass freshly cleaned. Some mighty and loving spirit had reached down from the heavens and outlined the firebender in new strokes of color and vibrance. There was a struggle in Kiyoshi's chest that had nothing to do with how hard she was running. Notes of longing and fear played in one chord. She tamped the feeling down, not wanting to confront what it meant right now. In any case, it was a poor time to be distracted. Soon, they exhausted their supply of houses to leap over. They reached the shanties in the outskirts, causing more confusion for the residents who'd seen Kiyoshi and Rangi head inward for the night, but now flee for their lives in the opposite direction, with three other people in tow. Lek raced for the copse of trees without being told, perhaps understanding that there were only a few places you could hide a 10-ton bison. Kiyoshi reached the copse in time to catch the boy as Peng Peng roared and blasted him backward with wind.
"Easy, girl,"
she coughed, her lungs burning from the run, and inhaled building dust.
"They're with us."
Walking across the sky must have been a highly efficient technique, because no one else seemed as tired as she. Rangi leaped onto Peng Peng's neck and unwound the reins from the saddle horn. The Daofei climbed onto the bison's back, gripping her fur with strange familiarity. Once they were settled, Rangi took Peng Peng up above the tree line. Lek was ecstatic.
"A bison!" he screamed, drumming on the saddle floor. "A real bison!"
"Calm down," Rangi said. "It's not like you can't see them near any air temple."
"He's just excited because we used to have one of our own,"
Wong said.
"Cute little fella named Longyan."
Despite their need to move quickly, Rangi paused, leaving Peng Peng swooping around in a gentle, idling circle.
"Wait, how?" she said. "Only air nomads can tame bison. The animals won't listen to strangers if they're stolen."
"We didn't steal Longyan," Karima said. "He was Jess's bison."
Rangi squinted in confusion and turned to Kiyoshi.
"But wasn't Jessa your mother?"
Kiyoshi winced. She spotted a reprieve from the awkward conversation, albeit only a temporary one. On the ground below them, waving his hands, was Lao Ge.
He'd managed to escape the dozens of men who had him surrounded and made it to the hiding spot in better time than anyone else. The Daofei didn't look one bit surprised to see him. Rongi took Peng Peng low and Wong leaned over, clasping hands with Lao Ge and swinging him onto the saddle, again with the smooth ease of practice.
"I thought we might finally be rid of your stinking hide," Lek yelled. "Not quite so easy," Lao Ge said. "Is anyone else thirsty? I could use..."
"Shut up," Rongi snapped. She fixed Kyoshi with her gaze again. "Does that mean what I think it means? About your mother?" She looked hurt at another secret being kept from her. But Kyoshi had honestly, sincerely forgotten to bring it up. It hadn't been relevant until now. "Yes," Kyoshi said sheepishly. "My mother was an airbender. I'm half air nomad." She felt terribly guilty. She'd forced Rongi to absorb a lot in the past day. Finding out that Kyoshi wasn't the fully Earth Kingdom girl that Rongi had assumed this whole time was yet another small weight added to the pile. But hearing that a despicable criminal and gang boss was an air nomad would have been enough to shock and confuse anyone. People around the world looked up to airbenders as enlightened paragons who were free of worldly concerns. They belonged to a benign, peaceful, monastic culture that was so spiritually pure that every single member had bending ability. Rongi resembled a child who'd just been told that the sweets tucked underneath her pillow had been left by her parents instead of the great harvest spirit. Karima and Wong detected the awkwardness between them and remained silent. Lek wasn't so observant.
"What's everyone looking sour for?"
he said, slapping Rongi and Kyoshi on their backs.
"We finally have a bison again. Our best days are ahead of us."
He thrust his fists into the air and let out a whoop.
"The Flying Opera Company is back in business!"
They camped along the bank of a dried-up creek, hiding themselves by virtue of being way out in the middle of nowhere. If the officers in Chameleon Bay knew what direction they'd gone in, it still would have taken at least a day by ostrich horse to catch up. They didn't bother hiding the fire Rongi blasted into the ground for them. It burned larger than they needed, sputtering and crackling from unseasoned fuel. They ate the last of the dried food. Karima and Wong fell asleep first, without asking about shifts. Lek waded into the waterless creek, picking up a few polished stones that caught his fancy before he settled in for the night. Rongi was holding a grudge over how badly the day's events had gone. Almost getting arrested by the local police, the Daofei insinuating themselves into their camp, the revelations about Kyoshi's heritage. So the two of them engaged in a silent, petty contest of wills to see who would fall asleep next. Kyoshi had the advantage, knowing that there was probably a nightmare waiting for her. She made sure Rongi was truly out cold before laying the good blanket they'd kept hidden from the others over the firebender's shoulders. Kyoshi walked along the river, wobbling over pavestone-sized rocks that had once been underwater, until she found Lao Ge sitting under a gnarled tree. Half its roots had been washed clean in some long-ago flash flood, while the rest clung tightly to the bank. The tree's efforts were in vain. It was dying. Lao Ge's eyes were closed in meditation.
"You're very loud," he said.
She frowned. She'd practiced stepping lightly for years as a servant to move like a whisper so as not to distract guests.
"I mean your spirit is loud," the old man said. "It rings in the air. Sometimes it screams. Like right now, your body may be all the way over there, but your spirit is grabbing me by the shoulders and howling in my face. If you went to the spirit world in your current condition,
you'd cause a typhoon the size of Ba Sing Se.
I know who you are, Kyoshi said. It took me a while to figure it out, but after seeing you fight so many men at once, it was clear. He opened one eye a crack. Kyoshi had a theory that people who liked meditating practiced that gesture to look good-humored and wise. You're Tie Guai, the immortal, Kyoshi said.
Oh?
Lao Ge said, fully interested now.
I suppose there was a description of me in Jessa's journal. Long white hair, great dancer, devastatingly handsome.
It didn't have that much detail. It said you were an underworld legend, rumored to be 200 years old. But that's obviously a tall tale.
Of course. I'm a man, not a spirit, after all.
I know it's you because of a different description, Kyoshi said. Tie Guai fights with a crutch. I was looking for someone with a wooden crutch or a bad leg. Then I saw you leaning on your earthbending while you fought the lawmen in the square. Lao Ge sighed, as if he pitied her for putting two and two together. He put his hands on his knees and raised himself to his feet. Then he tiptoed down the web of roots until he was in Kyoshi's face.
Why would one such as yourself seek out immortal Tie Guai?
He said, no longer an old man, but a human-headed monster asking a riddle in exchange for safe passage.
After all, your mother never did. She only called me Lao Ge.
The root he perched on shouldn't have been able to support a bird, let alone a human being. Kyoshi swallowed hard. She had a sense of tumbling downhill, her inner ears roiling like choppy seas, an inability to go back to the harbor. Because she was afraid of you, Kyoshi said. She didn't know when you first joined the group, but her suspicions grew over time that you were Tie Guai the assassin. Tie Guai, who killed the 40th Earth King. She figured out that you were using her smuggling gang as cover to travel from place to place as you eliminated targets for your own purposes. She was too scared to confront you. The entries in her mother's hand had been completely fearless while describing dangerous smuggling jobs, burglaries, and skirmishes with local militias. They were the musings of someone who'd thrilled to the life of a Dalfei. But the journal also had patches that were rife with criminal superstition, none more so than the scattered stories about a shadow who moved across the Earth Kingdom, snuffing out lives both exalted and lowly, according to some unknowable design. Jessa the smuggler had pieced together the pattern. Whenever the silly old man in her gang slipped away by himself, a death would happen nearby. Sometimes it would be a prominent noble who should have been safe behind thick walls and numerous guards. Lao Ge, the name had stuck hard, lowered his head and mouthed a quick prayer for the dead.
That woman always was very observant. I'm surprised I didn't catch her catching me. So what is it that her daughter wants? To bring me to justice?
No, Kyoshi said. I want you to teach me how to kill someone. If Lao Ge was surprised by her answer, he didn't show it.
Hit them in the head really hard with a rock.
No, Kyoshi repeated. Bending and killing are not the same thing. The image raced through her mind, the way Genju had so casually done the unspeakable, first to Yun and then to Kelsang. As easy as breathing. It needed to be that easy for her. She could afford no mental block, no hesitation when it came to taking his life.
She had to be ready in all regards when she next saw Genju.
A breeze in the night air puckered her skin.
"You should go to sleep, girl,"
Lao Ge said.
"Because you've already learned lesson one."
"So does that mean we'll continue later?" She decided to test the waters. "Sifu?"
"If and when I believe the time is right."
She bowed and left him to his meditations, backing away out of distrust as much as respect. Her footing was unsteady and threatened to roll her ankles. Right before she was about to turn, Lao Ge spoke up again.
"I'd appreciate it if you didn't tell the others about my independent ventures," he said. "I don't wish to complicate matters with our little merry band."
The relationship between Lao Ge and the other Daofei was not her problem. But if that was the only leverage she had in order to get him to teach her, she'd use it.
"I wouldn't dream of it, Sifu."
Lao Ge smiled benignly. It reminded her of Genju's, only more genuine. It reached his eyes. He had no need to hide what he was from her.
"And in return, I'll keep your secret," he said. "Kyoshi,